You're listening to Carrie Lutz's Financial Survival Network, where you get valuable information you just can't find anywhere else. To thrive in today's trying times, you need the Financial Survival Network, now more than ever. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and get your free newsletter and gift. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.
Welcome. You are watching and listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Carrie Lutz. It's 5/12/21. Well, today gold is getting slammed, but so is everything else. So, you know, days like this, well, our next guest, David Earthly. David, days like this, I just want to sell everything and buy Dogecoin and just let it roll. Hey, you're buying Dogecoin? Why don't you let us know? Send us an email, kl@carrielutz.com. That's the address. So, David, you know, these things, this gut-wrenching thing. I got a friend of mine who started out as a listener, and he's so frustrated with the price of gold and silver being so manipulated, controlled, and all this. And I said, patience, grasshopper, because back in 1999, when I started buying, gold was under $200 an ounce. It's gone up almost tenfold. So what are you complaining about?
Exactly. Yeah, you know, that's the one thing gold does best is frustrate its investors. You know, the 1800 line was the Maginot line of resistance there for quite some time. And it finally got over it. And the shares kind of led that charge. You know, the shares always lead the metal. And now it's become a little short-term overbought. And 1850 is that new line, because at 1850 level is very important as well, because it's right around the 200-day moving average. And it's also the top of that downtrend channel that began when gold hit $2,089 in August of last year. It's been in this bullish falling wedge channel. And bullish falling wedges frustrate people the most, because they just keep making higher lower lows and lower highs after a big, huge run-up. And that's what we had in gold. We had a big, huge run-up and that a move that needed to consolidate. And that's what it's doing. And it's a bullish falling wedge. And bullish falling wedges, once they finally break out of their channel, they tend to go up quite rapidly. So gold is just waiting for the catalyst that will take it above that 1850 level on a weekly basis, and then it'll really start moving. And I think the shares will tell you when that'll take place. Like I said, it's short-term overbought, and the shares are short-term overbought. So I do expect some consolidation and correction of the most recent move. But as far as the juniors are concerned, they're a major buy here, because they're still vastly undervalued in comparison to the gold price when you look at history. So a lot of these companies, you know, they've cashed up. The management teams have done the right things. You know, they watch their share price go up, you know, 5, 6, 8, 10 times. They cashed up, they're drilling, or they're de-risking their projects. And the ones that are in safe jurisdictions, you know, those are the companies to be in. You know, that's the great thing about this consolidation that's lasted over 9 months now, is it's given you all kinds of time to do your due diligence. Take your time, get a watch list, do your proper due diligence, and make sure you get into the right companies before the next move takes place, before the next impulse move takes place, which I think is going to be pretty soon.
Hey, and I remember when it broke 1850 a few months back, we had you on, and you said it could go as low as 1700. You were one of two or three people I knew who were making that call. Then it broke 1700 very briefly and created a W bottom, which, you know, for chartists out there, a W bottom or a W top, one of the most powerful chart formations out there. But again, it doesn't just go straight up, you know, go up in a straight line. There's a lot of zigging and zagging. But the fact, if it breaks 1850 and then pulls back slightly and stays under it for a bit, that will be a huge, huge buy sign.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. It's I think the buy sign came when it broke 1800. But yeah, I mean, this is going to chop here for a while. Is like I said, it is short term overbought. But the reason why I came up with 1700 was because the move from 2015 when gold hit 250 and moved all the way up to 2089, right? I'm sorry. When gold got down to 1045 after the first phase of the bull market. First phase of the bull market was the turn of the century to 2011, right? Where the gold went from 250 to like 1925. Well, we had a 50% correction from there down to 1045. And from 1045, it doubled to 2089. And the Fibonacci retracement from that double move from 1045 to 2089 was 1690. So that's why I said 1700. You know, gold really does adhere to the technicals. You know, you hear these people say that it's manipulated or it goes too far too fast on the upside, goes too far too fast on the downside. But if you take a step back and look at a big picture view, gold usually does stick with the technicals. And if the gold price would have kept going after it hit 2089, it would have became very parabolic. And then the correction after that would have been much more severe and much more stressful for gold investors. So this has been just a very healthy correction. It's stuck with the technicals. Like you said, it double bottomed on a daily basis at 1675. And once the gold price makes a weekly close above 1850, then technically this correction will be over.
All right. And I'm counting on that being sooner rather than later, but could take a couple of weeks, but I think it's going to be during May. A lot of people I know who really are into the technicals were all calling for, at the very least, an intermediate high in May, perhaps an all-time high. You never know.
Yeah, gold loves to surprise, you know, and what gold really loves to do is make false moves in opposite directions before it makes a big move. So, I wouldn't put anything past the gold price, but I think the odds are pretty good that double bottom holds at 1675.
Yep. No, I feel pretty confident about that one myself. And it's just fascinating to watch the vicissitudes of this market. So, look, every market out there adheres to these Fibonacci retracements, right? And these technical, when you have overbought markets, they pull back. When they're oversold, they go up. I mean, we see this. You think it's the same with cryptos, or are cryptos really different? Because all I hear is, ignore the chart patterns. It doesn't matter that Bitcoin's making lower highs because it's special. Now, look, like... If you can't even have a discussion and people shut you down because you just don't understand cryptos because they're magical, it really makes it difficult to really have a conversation with people.
Yeah, it does. You know, I'm a value investor and I'm a contrarian. And if I take a step back and look at the big picture view of a Bitcoin chart, it went from less than $1,000 in 2017? To $65,000 just recently. That's a pretty huge move, and I don't look at Bitcoin as a value investment here. And first of all, I don't really know how to value it because I don't know what to base it on. It looks to me like it's pure speculation that it's driving it. So I wouldn't touch anything with a chart that looks that's gone up that much in that amount of time. So I don't care what it is. And if it was the gold price, I'd have been out of it a long time ago. So that's how I look at Bitcoin and cryptocurrency.
Yeah, well, we had the peak back in December of 2017, where it hit like 19,500.
It almost got to 20,000. Yeah.
Almost, man. And totally sucked everyone in. I was expecting a 90% retracement, honestly.
Yeah, it went down to like 3,000, right?
Yeah, so it hit 84% retracement. I was actually going to buy it. I really was ready.
It's funny. I was kind of considering it too, and I thought, you know what? No.
At 2,000, I was going to buy it, not at 3,200, and that was my thing. But now I'm looking at it. The chart is parabolic. you know, it looks almost exactly like 2017. Actually, it's worse.
Yeah.
Because the charts I have are monthly closings, and it's really worse than 2017. So to think that it only goes up because it's special, I mean, as Charles Nenner said, the beauty of Bitcoin is it trades only on emotion, has nothing to do with fundamentals. Maybe the fundamentals of the dollar, I don't know. Hey, speaking of which, so we got a really big inflationary print today.
Oh, yeah.
And what does gold do? It goes down. I mean, just exactly what you're talking about. It always is frustrating because you think it should go up because it's a hedge against inflation, and it is, and it goes down. I mean, you know, people are pulling their hair out, David.
Well, yeah. I mean, obviously, this number was priced in. I mean, people can add, you know, I mean, they see lumber up over 30% in April and everything else going crazy. So it was pretty much priced in that it was going to be as high as it was. But like I said, you know, it's that 1850 level. You know, that is really the line in the sand now that the bears are really defending. Because they know that if it gets over that 1850 number on a weekly basis, that's the all clear for momentum traders to rush in, and also for generalist investors to come back in to the gold space, right. And you know that and this gold and as you know this sector is tiny. It's a tiny little sector in comparison to the marketplace. And, you know, there's not a lot of room for a big wave of people to get in. So this is why gold has these huge moves and juniors especially have these huge moves because the majors have already taken off basically. If you take a look at Newmont and Franco-Nevada, you know, their charts have already obviously bottomed. You know, they've raised their dividends. They're making gobs of cash at these gold prices. But the juniors have yet to really do much. And of course, there's been select companies that have moved quite a bit on drill results and on undervaluation. But the sector as a whole has yet to really take off. And I don't think that will take place until the gold price gets that weekly close above 1850 and that momentum money comes into this sector. That's when the juniors will really take off. So my advice is to basically get your buying completed pretty soon here. You know, I made my last purchase just yesterday. I put out a buy alert to my subscribers, and today I made my last purchase because I give a heads up right. to my subscribers before I buy something, and that was pretty much the last position that I took. I had built up some cash, and I was slowly taking my time to get into the right companies before I believe that the market was about to take off again. And I think that time is getting pretty close. So I wanted to make sure to have all my ducks in a row and have my cash positioned in the right companies before it does.
Definitely. Hey, I want you to take a look if you're by your computer at mm-hmm. Barrick Gold, G-O-L-D, for those of you out there not familiar. So it's really been the laggard of the majors, but look at that. It hit a peak naturally last year, August 1st of 2020, and then it went down. It really cratered in February, and now that looks like an extremely bullish chart pattern to me because it's crossed 2237, which was kind of where it stabilized. It's gone above that. It looks to me like the stock's going to go up.
Don't just survive. Thrive. The Financial Survival Network.
Arcana Corporation is on the verge of bringing the world's highest grade silver mine into production. The Revenue Virginius mine in Colorado has proven improbable silver reserves grading nearly 37 ounces per ton silver with an all-in sustaining production cost of only $8 per ounce of silver. The mine is fully permitted with infrastructure already in place, and the company has announced they plan to commence production in 2020. Achieving successful production usually results in a significant upward share price re-rating on the Lassonde curve. Arcana trades under the ticker AUN in Toronto and AUNFF in New York. To learn more, go to arcana.com. That's ARCANA.com.
This is the Financial Survival Network, the information you need to thrive now more than ever.
Yeah, it's got resistance there at its 50-week moving average. That's where it's hung up, and it's short-term overbought as well. So I wouldn't be surprised to see some backing and filling here of that huge move that it made last week. You know, a lot of these stocks made pretty big moves last week, and they became short-term overbought. So some backing and filling before they continue to move up again is normal. You know, and Barrick, like Newmont, you know, they continue to raise their dividends. They have a lot of cash on the books, and they continue to make gobs of money at these gold prices. I mean, even if the gold price gets down to that 1675 level again, or even lower down to 1600, they're still making quite a bit of profit here with all in sustaining costs averaging at about a little over $1,000 an ounce here.
And, you know, it's amazing to me the amount of cash that these guys have. Even the smaller majors like a Kirkland Lake, not quite in Barrick's class, right? But still producing well in excess of 1 million ounces a year of gold, expanding their operations, and they got $800 million sitting there in the bank, and just did some joint ventures with a couple of our sponsors, Orefinders and Astango River Resources. But, you know, it was nothing for them. I mean, they've got $800 million. That money is searching for a home. So we're going to see some M&A activity is my point here, David, right?
Oh, absolutely. And you've got Newmont. It's got over $5 billion in cash and $8 billion in free cash flow. So, you know, these companies, they're just waiting for the marketplace to open up to where they can travel to visit these projects before they take them over, because, you know, they have to do their due diligence. And the mergers and acquisitions that have taken place thus far, up until the most recent one of the weird one that really didn't make much sense, of Fortuna making an offer on Roxgold. They're familiar with the projects. They are already invested in them. They're closer. They're easy for them to get to do their due diligence before they make an offer. But yeah, I mean, that's the one takeaway that I saw as a positive over that Fortuna Roxgold deal was it was not intercontinental. You know, this is a company that has all their operations in Latin America, that's trying to take over a company that has all their operations in Africa. So, when you see something like that, it's positive, because it means that maybe it's the marketplace is opening up where these companies can visit these projects before they attempt to take them over.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, the majors' reserves are down. And production, like Newmont's production, is starting to go down. So what choice do they have? They don't really have the extensive exploration divisions that they once had. They've effectively outsourced all that to the juniors in exchange for making some substantial, to the juniors, not to them, investments in the juniors. In the junior sector. And then when their strategy is, when it looks like they've got something, then they'll go do the acquisition.
Yeah, I mean, and they've wisely learned from the mistakes of the past. You know, I mean, in 2010 and 2011, they were just after ounces, you know, low grade bulk tonnage ounces at any price, and it really burned them. And so now they've done is they take strategic investments in the companies they like, and they've built up their balance sheets. They've got strong balance sheets. So what you've been seeing this time around in the mergers and acquisitions is cash deals. We didn't see hardly any cash deals during the last bull market, at the top of the last bull market, when the merger and acquisition wave happened in 2010, 2011. Now you're seeing a lot of these cash deals, and investors love cash deals that are invested in these juniors, because it's an instant payday. You know, for instance, when you saw Fortuna make their bid for Roxgold at a 42% premium, that premium was wiped out within 2 days because it was an all share deal that really didn't make sense to the marketplace. So when you see an all cash deal, you know, I've been involved in a few of them recently, and you know, that's an instant payday for me and my subscribers. So because, you know, I have no interest in owning shares in a major. If it gets taken out by a major cash offer, I'm out. Thank you very much. I'll take the profit, put it in the bank, and then reinvest the investment capital into something else.
Yeah, well, the majors don't want to make dilutive acquisitions, right?
Right.
It's going to drive the share price lower. The whole point is you got all this excess cash flow. Go pay cash for these things. It's not a lot of money, you know, to make a $1 billion acquisition. I don't know who Newmont would have to go buy, but it would be a huge deal. They're just not making deals like that now.
Right.
So they don't have to borrow. Even if they did have to borrow, their debt positions in these companies have dramatically improved because they wrote everything off and the cash flow, they've been paying down debt. So they could borrow as well. So everything is pointing ahead that this is going to be a major, major M&A cycle in the sector.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it's inevitable. it's a lot cheaper to get ounces on Bay Street than it is to go out and try to create exploration programs and exploration teams to do it after you were forced to cancel all those, to fire all those exploration people during the bear market because you were trying to make a profit.
Yeah. And they are just not efficient explorers.
No,
like
not.
Juniors, because the juniors are betting everything on it. Everybody has skin in the game. They're not getting paid huge salaries. And their payday is when this thing gets acquired, when they have a strike, a discovery. And then hopefully the majors will be out there to buy it. Now, let me ask you a question, because normally you got to have your final feasibility, or at least your pre-fees, before the majors are going to really take a look at it and write the check. Will we get to the point where they're going to do it on a PEA?
Well, we just did recently, where Newmont took over GT Gold, and they weren't at a pre-fees yet, I don't believe. So, you know, it all depends on if the junior sees, if the major sees blue sky there. You know, if the junior has proved up proof of concept enough to where the major sees blue sky in a tier one jurisdiction in a district scale size land package, and they envision, hey, I believe there's 4 or 5 million ounces here. I don't need to see anymore. And the junior's trading at a discount, which most of these things are right now, they're going to go ahead and make a move. I mean, I think it was $380 million they paid for GT Gold, and out of the billions that Newmont has in cash, I mean, that's lunch money.
Yeah, lunch money. And like you said, it's a lot easier to find ounces on Bay Street than it is to reactivate,
right,
to set up these programs again. And they weren't good at it because the majors are really a business about producing ounces. They aren't really a business about discoveries, making new discoveries. They're just not efficient at it.
Yeah. You know,
everybody gets paid too much money at majors for that to be efficient. So, well, these are definitely interesting times ahead, David. So needless to say, if you go to Junior Miner Junkie, that's JUNKY.com, you're not going to see David liquidating his portfolio and buying Dogecoin, needless to say.
Not just yet, no.
All right. Well, hey, if you got questions for David, why don't you send me an email to kl@carryletz.com. That's my personal email address. Sign up for a free newsletter and go take a look at Junior Miner Junkie, JUNKY. I think you will be pleased with what you find there, the results that David has achieved in the past, and the transparency. You basically get a look over David's shoulder, and he's not front running you on purchases or anything else, waits 24 hours after a recommendation to buy shares. All of these things and more, new recommendation just got today. So you should definitely take a look at it. Links in the show notes. David, always a pleasure. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you, Carrie. Always great to talk to you.
Thanks for listening to Carrie Lutz's Financial Survival Network, your solution to today's trying times. For the latest, go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.